Welcome to Living Healthy Together. We talk a lot about health and wellness on this show, and today we're going to talk about ultra marathons with two registered dietitians, two clinical dietitians from our region, Amanda Gibbs, who is a clinical dietitian at Alice Hyde Medical Center for UVM Health, and Johnny Gerken, a clinical nutrition manager at Adirondack Health, who's also a registered dietitian, certified diabetes management educator. And both Amanda and Johnny bring a ton of expertise and insight into nutrition. They're also lifelong runners and athletes, so we're extremely excited to have them on the show today to talk about extreme athletic events like ultramarathons, their own experiences, and then also the tips, tricks, and insight that can help you and your friends and family get out there, be more active and healthy every day, and possibly break into these extreme athletic events that may seem out of reach and really daunting to get into. Amanda, tell us a little bit about yourself as a clinical dietitian and as a runner. When did your love of running start, and how did you get into ultramarathons?
I live here in the North Country in Saranac Lake. I am a proud mother of our 8-year-old and 2 bonus children. I became a dietitian about 14 years ago. Originally, I went to school to be a social worker. And that's when my love of nutrition and running kind of paired together. And I realized that I wanted to do more nutrition. I started running because I played high school sports, field hockey and softball. And I also played softball in college. And then when I moved up here, it wasn't really sports that were really well known or well played in the level that I was used to, and realized that I wanted to still be athletic. Living in the Lake Placid, Saranac Lake area, there's full of athletes, just avid hikers, and all around healthy living. And I enjoyed running before, and I thought I'd just give it a shot and realized that I really liked it and I was somewhat good at it.
You and Johnny have been running together for a long time now. Johnny, tell us about how you got into this stuff and how did you meet Amanda?
So I got into this stuff. I was not a registered dietitian. Also, this is my second career choice. I was originally went to school for math, got into the restaurant business, and then decided I wanted a more 9-to-5 job and not sure what that was. But I met my husband. He was training for Ironman. And just, you know, being smitten, I wanted to spend time with him. So I started running, biking, and well, swimming I had already done. And that's how we'd met, was in the pool. I was active, but I started doing all these things. And he did his Ironman. And I realized I need to sign up for next year because I had pretty much done all of the training. So that was really, I jumped all into it. The next year, did my first Ironman. And then found with that I really kind of liked the running aspect of it too, but still continue to do triathlons, and then decided to go into nutrition. And I think doing these sports and races helped influence that choice, because really just being aware, you know, when you're doing that endurance, of how much nutrition affects your body, made me even more interested in nutrition. So then I went back to school, became a dietitian, and then, you know, had babies at the same time. I now have a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old. And I definitely, after kids, I got away from the triathlons just because the time spent, it's hard to swim and bike with babies, but running you can do with a stroller. As they get bigger, you can do with them on a bike. They still love to bike with me while I'm running distance. My fastest half marathon ever was pushing a double stroller while training. I trained every run with a double stroller and just felt like I was flying on race day.
You're just showing off. Now you're just showing off.
But yeah, they've been a part of it all along. So I met Amanda early in that, probably about 2 years after my first Ironman, because I was about a year married. So I want to say 17 years ago that Amanda and I, my husband actually, he had heard about Amanda, and we were running or walking around the lake, and he's like, there's this girl that you'd probably like to meet. And we just started talking, and we just have been running ever since.
I wanted to get into, at some point, the dimension of this, because in Amanda's story, there's this strong presence of family. I think if I remember correctly, Amanda, when you were training for your first ultra marathon or your first full marathon, you made your family a part of that. So can you guys both talk about the decision to make your family a part of your training? I know for you, Johnny, it's obvious that's been the reality from the very beginning. Amanda, What was that experience like for you? Did that add to the experience? Did it add difficulty? Did it add satisfaction? What was the experience of bringing these other people along for the ride with you rather than just going solo?
I think for the support and commitment, it is a lot to train for an ultra marathon as well as working full time. It is difficult, I think, to do it alone. And I love spending time with my family. And this is a way to incorporate them into my life as well and my training life. I think when we travel to these races, to have family there, when you're at mile 35 and you feel really awful and you get to an aid station and your children are there with these homemade signs and cheering for you and running along the way, it gives you the lift that you need. And as well as like having our husbands there, they are so dialed into what we may need nutritionally, physically, just to give us a hug or just tell us to like suck it up. It's just really nice to do this journey with our families. And our families are like family, even though we're not biologically, they're so entwined to each other that it's just one really fun. And the children are really enjoying it because they're telling us year after year, do we get to go to this race with you guys? Are you guys doing this race? Because we really enjoyed going here. And what's the next one that we get to go to?
So cool, because I think a lot of people, myself included, think of running as a solo thing, right? Even if you see people running in a group, for some reason, my brain is like, they're all running by themselves. It's a really interesting wrinkle to realize that this can be a communal thing. Let's take a step back and define for everyone what an ultra marathon is. I think everybody knows what a marathon is, right? It's 26 miles of running. An ultra marathon is someone saying, that's not good enough for me. I want to do twice that.
And then some. So an ultra marathon, I think, is classified as anything over 26.2 miles. So a 50K, which would be just over 32 miles, I think, would be considered an ultra marathon.
Is it all kind of one thing, or are there different variations on this theme, right? You can do a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, it's any distance beyond that 26.2. So there tends to be some classic distances where you do the 50K, which Amanda just said, which is about 32 miles, or a 50 miler, or a 100 miler, or a 100K. Those tend to be a little bit more set races, but really it can be anything.
And they also can be on the road or on trails.
What do these small changes, or relatively small changes, do they make a big impact? Is it a lot different running a road race versus a cross-country race? And how does that influence your experience?
Well, I mean, just like the physics of, you know, a road race is going to be faster. You're getting more rebound from the road. Your time is faster versus, you know, you go on a trail and the loose ground is sucking up your energy. What you might be doing a 7.5 minute mile on the road, all of a sudden you're putting that same energy and it's like a 9.5 minute mile. So it's definitely adapting to that. We certainly have to be much more aware on the road. I mean, in the woods, you know, roots and rocks, we've definitely have our fair share of falls. So I think those are probably big differences, certainly, you know, on your body, you know, it takes longer to run in the trails, but, you know, your knees, it's a little, you know, we're both in our 40s. I kind of like running on in the trails. It's a little bit easier in my body. So I don't know. That's my response.
Yeah. Same with Johnny. You know, we did road marathons and half marathons for the longest of time, but as we age, our body didn't necessarily bounce back as quick. We enjoyed doing marathons and going for the time, but we needed a little bit of change of pace, and we both love trails. We both love, you know, being in the woods, and we wanted to see what we could do. I think there's still more that we can do in the marathon world, but there's so much more we can do, I think, in the ultra marathon world, where you go slower, but you go farther. And you wanted to push yourself to see what you can do, and if you can take your knocks, like she said, we have taken more share of our falls and bruises, but you just have to get back up and keep going and getting it to the finish line and gritting it out and supporting each other along the way.
To add to that too, it's kind of become our routine the last couple of years of kicking up the spring season with a Boston Marathon. So we start off marathon training and then we might do a half or a full after that, but then the rest of the year becomes more into the ultra and then we get into the woods for the rest of the season.
I'm for for a quick break here on Living Healthy Together. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation about extreme athletes, athletic events, and preparation. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together. We're here with Johnny Gerken and Amanda Gibbs, two clinical dietitians. Johnny's with Adirondack Health. Amanda works at Alice Hyde Medical Center and is part of the UVM Health Network. We're talking about their passion for running, their passion for extreme athleticism. Hopefully I'm not offending you both by continuing to say it that way, but it really is extreme. This idea that you can run 30, 40, 50 kilometers or more across a variety of terrain. And before we went to break, you were talking about the physical impacts that grow and change as we age. Let's talk about the mental impacts. I think it's really interesting. You both were talking about kicking your season off with the Boston Marathon, which I think lives in a lot of people's heads as a thing that people train all year. And that's their thing that they do. For you, it's the starting gun. It's the first thing that you do. What's it like running in a race like that versus running in something that's maybe less well attended or less well known?
For me, there's nothing like the Boston Marathon in terms of marathons. The crowd support, the town support, just the thrill of it, the iconicness of it. It's just really amazing to have the ability and the privilege to run.
Because you have to qualify for that, right? That's not something you just can show up and run for. You've got to register. There's a limited number of spots. How does it all work?
So typically how it works is that Boston has a qualifying time per age group. And so you have to at least hit that qualifying time. But there has been a huge boom in running in the most recent probably decade, where even if you hit your qualifying time, that doesn't guarantee you an entry into Boston. They still take the fastest times. So typically you've had to beat that time anywhere from 4 to 7 minutes faster than your actual qualifying time to have the ability to run Boston.
Consecutively, have you guys done Boston together? Because you do it together, right?
So this year was my second year that I've consecutively done it with Johnny, and she's done it. I'll let her talk, but she's done it more.
2 years with Amanda. I've done it 3 years consecutively, and I did it 3 years, I say BC, before children, before I got back into all of this.
How did having kids change you guys as runners? There's a variety of changes, right? There's the physical, there's the mental. You've got this big job of being a mom, of being a parent, and family life is changing. How does it work? How did it work for you?
I mean, just being a mom, everything you do intertwines, whether it's work or, you know, running or just being home with them. You don't ever want to feel like you're taking away from the kids by anything. You don't want to feel like running is a selfish thing. So it's, you know, you're an opportunist when you go out. We tend to like to run early in the morning on our weekends, our long runs where the kids are still sleeping or just kind of like groggily waking up. So I think our morning runs have gotten a lot earlier, just so then we get the whole rest of the day to hang out with them. But it also adds to the day. I feel like I'm a better mom because I run. You know, I did something for myself in the morning and I feel great and I'm jazzed up because I had an awesome run. And now I'm all in for the kids. I'm not, you know, I love it. And then on the weekdays, you know, the weekdays after school and work, you know, I always invite the kids if they want to bike with me. It's, yeah. And they're very much involved in it. They're used to it. And I feel like I feel like I don't take from them. I feel like it just adds to me as a mom that I'm doing this. And also, you know, hopefully it's setting a good example for them for healthy choices. And yeah, they do like to do little runs and stuff. And we incorporate them with little runs too. So yeah.
Yeah, to piggyback off of that, I agree with her. I also pushed my son when he was younger in the stroller thousands of miles. I wish I had a pedometer on it so I could actually like nail it down. And now that they're older, it's best. Like we might have a long run or even a short run, but we go places where they can bike with us. So it was not like we're taking full time away from them, that we're still incorporating healthy living and exercise through them. In that I train, I guess, as as you get older, you're supposed to get smarter, right? So I also train not as many days. I only do 4 days a week, and I make those 4 days count. So I have other 3 days that I can fully focus on my family and have a better work-life training balance.
It's definitely about that balance for sure. You know, before kids, you could have probably done more of a regimen, like this day I'm going to do this many miles and just really stick to a program. There's got to be a lot of flexibility in being an opportunist.
Kids are, at least my son, is all about the experiences. Every day is a safari for him. He's experiencing the world like an actual theme park. He wants to go everywhere. He wants to do all of the things. And you've given your families, by bringing them along on this journey with you, these experiences and these examples, right? And they're not even processing them as examples. They're not like, oh, mom's showing me how to be healthy. It's just they're along for this cool experience and they're loving every minute of it.
I think they also love the snacks that they get to have. When you do ultra marathons, you get to eat some pretty cool food and pretty awesome snacks that they also enjoy.
Okay, now you've hit on my home turf here. I always say I'm either eating or thinking about eating. Tell me about the snacks. Maybe this will make me get involved. What do you get to eat?
Anything and anything that your stomach can handle. I have a little bit more of a finicky stomach, so I try to drink a lot of my nutrition that I can in specialized carb drinks. But I also love snack mix. I know I do pretzels, but you can do grilled cheese sandwiches.
Really?
You name it.
You don't just curl up into a ball and take a nap on the side of the trail after eating a grilled cheese?
No, but I could see how that would work. But
that would be me. That would be me.
You can eat M&Ms and candy, and some people drink beer. Like, it's whatever fuels you that works.
What's your favorite snack on a run, Joni?
So that's really the difference between definitely marathons, like, because I'm running is a harder, more intense, that I just stick to the goos and stuff. But that's the nice thing about the ultras, where you're, you know, long distance over time. I like to have that feeling of food in my stomach. So I'll eat a sandwich, I'll eat pretzels, I'll eat literally anything and anything, certainly focusing on the carbs. Try not to eat too much fat, because the fat definitely can hold in your stomach a little bit longer. But yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit. And when you're doing a long distance, your body will tell you what you want. Like, I literally think about putting the food in my mouth, and if it makes my stomach turn or it sounds amazing, that's what I go for. And our husbands always have a variety waiting for us, or in some of the ultras, there's literally like buffet tables along the way.
That's really interesting. Is that really strong connection with your mind thinking about a food and your body saying go or no go? Is that something you can only find in this athletic environment, or does that happen to you in everyday life too?
This only happens to me in ultra marathon training for me.
I would say mostly in the moment. I think we all have that intuition, and we've definitely gotten away from that in general when it comes to nutrition, you know, now that we have grocery stores and all these options. So I think there is an ability to know what our body needs, but certainly when you're really pushing it to your limit, your body's going to yell it at you versus hint it at you.
Talk about limits for a second, because we haven't gone there yet, but these are obviously events, whether it's a marathon or an ultra marathon or a 5K, everybody's got a limit. And this is about pushing yourself to that limit. How do you experience that physically and mentally? Your physical body is telling you stuff, but there's also a mental aspect, especially to running. Talk about that interplay, the physical, the mental, and then not just finding your limit, but finding a way to maintain once you reach it.
I think it's been different for different races, but especially for the ultra marathon, I know for me, having the support of Johnny and running with, when you have your highs and lows and you have somebody else with you, usually you don't have them at the same time, so you're able to pull somebody else through or help them out. But just really goal-oriented. Like, I am super goal-oriented. So if I set a goal that I'm going to hit that finish line, I'm going to hit that finish line and problem solve. You problem solve along the way. Like, am I just tired? Am I hurt? Am I going to hurt myself? Or is it just like, get your butt in gear and get moving? Like, take a breather, take a couple minutes, get another snack, you know, have a pity party even if you need for a minute, but then get going. That's why I think in the ultras are so interesting. I don't think I haven't hit my limit. I am really excited to see how far we can go and what kind of terrain we can run on and, yeah, what we can experience and what we can endure. You know, the last race was 100K, and 5 miles from the end, I thought, there's no way I'm going to get to it. But then half mile later, we're like, okay, let's go. And then you hit the finish line, and it's that euphoria that, like, you didn't quit. You accomplished something amazing, and all the time, energy put into it was worth it, and it was just really validating.
What about you, Johnny?
Kind of going along with just really paying attention to your body and doing a lot of self-assessments out the way. I mean, there sometimes it is hard to judge because, you know, you're 50 miles in, your body's going to hurt. You're going to expect some aches and pains, but differentiating that because, you know, you are pushing yourself to the limit, is there a point where you are going to hurt yourself or this is the expected pain? And sometimes that even takes maybe even a moment of walking to just be like, is it okay? You know, I haven't really hit my limit in an ultra. The worst case scenario, I did have heat stroke once in the race, and I thought I was at mile 25 of a marathon, and I ended up dropping from heat stroke. That I judged wrong. I thought that was just how I was supposed to feel. So you do get it wrong sometimes.
Oh my gosh.
But it does take some self-assessing because, you know, if you're going to push it, it's going
to
hurt.
I think that's something important to flag for folks here. If you're getting excited like I am, and you're like, I'm going to go out and run a mile. This is making me feel like I can do this. Even the experts miss sometimes, right? They miss the signs and the symptoms.
Absolutely.
So really important to listen to yourself. And it's harder to do that when you're at the beginning of things and you're still feeling it out. How long did it take you to really feel like I fully understand my body? Is it always a case by case?
For me, it's always a case by case. I think fully is a long shot. Sometimes just hoping I'm making the best guess.
Same here. You never know. You could go in the most prepared mentally, physically, emotionally. And at mile 5, you could do something and you're like, what have I done again? What am I doing this for? And then you just take that moment and you're like, okay. And then you keep going.
Time for another quick break here on Living Healthy Together. And I know what you're thinking. We have two clinical dietitians here, and Phil has yet to ask them a single question about nutrition. We'll get to that after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together. We're talking about ultramarathons, running, athletic endeavors that push us to our limits. We're here with Amanda Gibbs from Alice Hyde and Johnny Gerken from Adirondack Health, both clinical dietitians. They've been runners for decades, been ultramarathoners for a minute now. Let's talk about nutrition. Is nutrition clearly the most important thing that people need to do, or does it fall somewhere in along a spectrum of a bunch of different things that people need to do if they want to break into these kinds of events?
So there's three big things: the training, your mindset, and the nutrition. I think are the three big things when it comes to this. I mean, you can't do any of it without including all three, but nutrition is huge, especially if you want to be at your peak performance. And I would say even more so as we're getting into the ultra, because that long distance, it's, you know, you ever get behind in your nutrition, it's going to be, you're going to go downhill from there. You know, if you get a part that you haven't gotten enough carbs or all that, there's no making up for it after, you know, mile 50, you know, throwing out a number, but, you know, pretty far in there, there's no way to make up for it. So you really, really need to be part of it. You also need to know what settles in your stomach, you know, because if you're going to have GI discomfort or end up with, you know, diarrhea, you're going to be losing electrolytes, which you're going to be losing strength. And nutrition is way up there. I think it's number one. But again, you can't do this without training, and you can't do this without a mindset of determination. So it's huge.
Yeah, I agree with Johnny. I think it might be number one. I mean, you need to do the training, but if you don't have the basic fuel to fuel your body in order to do that training, you're not going to get very far in the race. You have to be able to know what foods, like she said, that settles with you, but know what foods will burn, like you can use as energy, as quick energy, and to know that you can't get behind in this at all. Once you're behind, you can never catch up.
We're talking specifically about race day nutrition, right? We're not, because there's, I'm assuming there's multiple aspects to this. There's your everyday nutrition and there's what you do on race day. How does everyday nutrition lead you to race day? I'm assuming there's probably a lot more flexibility there, right? But do you guys have a program that you abide by? How do you live your everyday life while supporting these larger than life pursuits that you're involved in?
I think for me, it's just the overall lifestyle that we live. Being dietitians, we're not, you know, people have the misconception that we're super strict, right? No sugar, no fats, no desserts, no ice cream, you know? But I don't feel like we're like that. We have everything in moderation and enjoy it. But I think our meals are always really well balanced with fruits, vegetables, carbs, and proteins, and with a little bit of desserts. I think that hydration is really important. That's something that you always have to be on top of every day. You could have the best food, but if you didn't drink enough throughout the day and you go out for the littlest run, we don't get very far.
This is something that I was just exposed to. I was recently at my parents, and I observed this interaction between my parents where my dad said to my mom, I haven't seen you drink anything today. You need to hydrate. And he came back with a bottled iced tea for her. And I'm like, I was expecting him to come back with a water. But not everybody drinks water. Not everybody likes water. What do people need? And are there alternatives that if you don't like water, you can still get by doing these other things?
The rule is all fluids are hydrating, with the exception of alcohol. Definitely not. The concern of the iced tea that you're mentioning is the caffeine, because caffeine can be dehydrating. More recent research shows that if you drink the same amount of caffeine every day and regularly at that time, it is hydrating. It can count as your hydration. Say you drink 2 cups of coffee if you drink those 2 cups of coffee every morning, you can count that towards your hydration. But if one day you have 3, that's going to mess you up as a diet. As a more of a diuretic. So, but yeah, as long as, you know, whether it's juice, milk, Gatorade, all of those are hydrating. It's just knowing what other things you want to put into your body. You know, certainly you don't want to rely on just juice and sugary drinks because you're going to get some extra calories from that. But I mean, for us on race day, we want those extra calories too. But in a more sedative day, you wouldn't want those things. But yeah, I mean, flavored waters, whatever gets you to drink water. Amanda's a huge bubbly carbonated water person. I think only when she's running does she drink flat water. So that works too.
I am also a carbonated water aficionado. Amanda, what's your favorite?
I really enjoy the brand of the Bubblies. They make a passion fruit that is on par, that I could drink that. Oh, I do drink that every day, all day.
I haven't had that one yet. I'll have to try it.
It is delicious. And they also make a pineapple one.
I have had the pineapple. I'm a fool for any type of citrus, but my favorite is the Polar Blueberry Lemonade. If you put a case of that in front of me, that's going to be gone in a week. I love that stuff.
There isn't a sparkling water yet that I have not enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah. I can agree with that. Let's talk a little bit more about diet, about nutrition. Amanda, you at least, I know, work with people across a long spectrum of care, right? You work inpatient, you work outpatient, you work long-term care at the Alice Center. Johnny, what's the patient population that you serve? And what are the things, whether it's diet or hydration, what are the top line things that you see your communities needing to hear? What are the things that you want to impress upon people, the challenges or problems or deficiencies that you see every day that can be corrected?
Yeah, so I do the same. I do a variety of inpatient, outpatient. I used to do long-term care also with a variety of populations as well in community hospital. You hit everything. But I think the biggest thing is two things. One, there's no quick fix. It is about balanced nutrition. You know, there's all those things that if you don't eat this or you eat more than this, you're going to be healthy. Specific foods, that's all just gimmick. I feel like a lot of our job is fighting, you know, what people read in magazines or, you know, advertisements. It is about that balanced plate of carbs, protein, fruits and vegetables. And the one thing that I do think that misses out on a lot of people's diet that I tend to push is the whole grains and the fiber aspect. There's a lot of push on protein. protein foods these days. Yes, we need protein, but the fiber aspect gets missed a lot. And it, for a lot of chronic diseases that we help with as clinical dietitians, like heart disease or GI diseases, I mean, the fiber is just like is huge. And in general, most of the population does not get enough.
I'm so glad that you mentioned fiber, because that is hands down the most frustrating part of diet for me. I got really into tracking macros for about a year last year, and I can count on one hand the number of days that I actually hit the fiber target. And that was with me being really dialed in and trying really hard. Obviously, I didn't try hard enough because I didn't make it for most of the days. But are there tips or tricks? What's a good way for people to get more fiber in their diet that's not going to kind of flip the table on their meal times every day?
I think it's the portioning, really making half your plate full of fruits and vegetables and prioritizing those whole grains. Without that, you're really not going to hit it. And I tell people, you really do that. Well, you said you count your fiber grams, because you might be eating a whole lot more fiber than your neighbor and the person next to you. And it seems like a lot, because I can't even remember the statistics, but it's like less than 10% of the population gets enough fiber in their diet. So really counting it. But yeah, it's those fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. That's where you're going to get your fiber from. And you know what? And sometimes a little psyllium fiber like Minimusel or whatever, if you can't quite get it, is almost like a multivitamin at the end of the day too.
Amanda, what do you see? Do you see the same thing? Every community is a little bit different. What do you see in Malone and the surrounding area?
I think I see pretty much the same things. I see a little bit more, I think, in terms of, because we live near the reservations and statistically, Native Americans have a higher population of having diabetes. So I work a little bit more with diabetics and sugar and counting carbs that way. And so I see more prevalence of diabetes up in this particular area.
We've talked about general nutrition. Now let's talk about race day nutrition. I know that there's probably a spectrum here too for what you guys are doing. That race day nutrition probably looks different than what maybe someone doing a 5K is doing, or a beginner that's running shorter organized races are doing. But what are the key components here? You mentioned gels, you mentioned fruit juice and liquid carbs and things like that. Is there an easy way or a beginner's program that you can give folks? If someone's out there listening right now, I'm fairly healthy, I'm fairly active, but I want to give racing a try. What do they need to bring with them, or how do they need to work their diet on the day of a race?
Honestly, I think it's up to the person and up to the race. It's trial and error. What I could tell you is that most importantly on race day, no matter the length, you have to drink enough fluids and you have to have enough carbs. Now, whether that comes in the form of a high carb drink or a gel or a bar, you have to do a little bit of research in terms of how much you think you need and what your stomach is able to handle.
Food science is another really interesting collection of topics. Obviously, gels and kind of athletic supplements fall into that. Are there things, I don't want you to mention brand names, right? Because we're not about giving people free advertising, but are there resources that are game changers that people should be aware of and consider for their own use to support their athletic endeavors? Or is it all just, like you said, you just got to do your research and figure out what works best for you?
I agree a lot with Amanda said, what works best for you. Yeah, not giving away brands, but certainly, I mean, big things are carbs before, carbs during, and then protein after for recovery. But, you know, when it comes to the products that you choose, I tend to like products that have a little bit of amino acids in them in addition to the carbs, just to slow down the digestion. I find the products that are just straight carbs, just they process too quickly. I have a high and then a low when it upsets my stomach, where something that has a little bit of amino acids and they'll tell you on it. So amino acids are proteins, but just really small particles of proteins, but it's just enough to slow down the digestion so you don't get those highs. And it's a little bit more of a consistent energy.
Let's talk about misinformation and things that can trip people up. Like you mentioned earlier, there's a huge industry around diet, around nutrition, and around race preparation, any athletic endeavor, right? It seems like everybody's trying to sell you something at one point or another. So how do you evaluate claims or products that come across your radar? What are red flags for you that you're like, nope, that's obviously a scam. That's obviously not true. That's something that's the promise doesn't fit the payoff.
I think, you know, for me, when something comes out, it's always considered a fad diet. I'm research-based. I'm clinical-based. I want to see the research behind what you are saying and to see if it works or doesn't work. Anyone can say, I have the newest, best drug out there that's going to help you lose weight or get healthy. But 6 months from now, is that still going to be true? You know, I think the age old of what you put in your mouth versus how many, what you burn stays true. You still have to be aware of the quality and the quantity of you eat, what you eat. I don't think there's a drug on the market that's going to melt every calorie and fat that you eat. You still have to be conscious of that and to be healthy and to exercise still.
I agree. It's just, it's tough with all the marketing of different products and different diets out there. Sometimes I feel like you do need a master's in nutrition to identify what's okay and not okay. And, you know, sometimes I catch myself, a magazine advertisement. I'm like, wait, no, I try to look at my background and that doesn't make sense, but the advertising was so good. I feel bad for the people that don't have a nutrition degree sometimes, but it is definitely avoiding the fad things. Anything that is just extreme is not going to work. And I tell people, if you can't be doing that thing in 20 years from now, also, if it's an extreme diet, if you're not going to stick to that same diet 20 years from now, it's not going to work for you also, because anytime people go on some kind of strip diet that they can't stay on, they're going to be regaining that weight or more, or they're just going to be messing with everything.
And the same is probably true of the training regimes too, right? You guys are advanced enough that you probably have developed by now your own training. You know what works for you or what your goals are, but there are cookie cutter regimes out there, and there are fitness influencers and products that you can buy if you're just getting started or you don't want to put in the work and develop your own thing. Did you guys use any of those tools along your journey through the years, and what worked and what didn't work for you?
For me, I was a runner before, I had my son, but I had a goal of coming back to Boston after I had him. And I knew that I needed help. I wasn't going to be able to do it on my own. So locally, there is an incredible gentleman, and he is a coach. And I spoke with him, and he took me on as an athlete and helped set the training plans based on what my goal was. So he was really super helpful that way.
Johnny, what about you? You said your kind of entry point here was an Ironman competition that your significant other was training for. That's different than training for an ultramarathon, I'm assuming, right? So how does that spectrum work?
Yeah, so I mostly used internet research of trying to find programs that would work with my lifestyle and just reviews and that kind of thing. So it's a commitment. That's a lot of why I don't do Ironman now after kids, because that's a lot more. You would think that training for 100 mile and all that is a lot, but it's not quite the same as training for Ironman as far as time commitment. Now a lot of my training, I piggyback off of Amanda. We do so many of our runs together that she has a coach and she tells us what we're running each day pretty much.
It's good to have somebody be the boss.
Yes.
I enjoy that as well. The best shape that I've ever been in my life, this was back when I was living in Pennsylvania, and one of my friends who is a gym rat to the nth degree was like, hey, start coming to the gym with me. And I rode his coattails all the way to the best shape of my life. Accountability and having a partner, I don't think you can overstate the impact that can have on your health and wellness, for sure.
Yeah, I think people just need to know if you're going to start an ultramarathon, there isn't a quick fix. You have to put the miles in. You have to put the time on the feet. There's no product out there that you take and all of a sudden you can run 50 miles with no problems. You have to be willing to get out there and put the miles in and put the time in.
Anybody really can do it with that commitment. You start a small, what could feel like ultra to us, could be a 5 mile to you, and just putting that time and commitment and progressively building up.
Yeah. If Rome wasn't built in a day, you're not going to turn into a marathoner in one day or a week or a month, probably. So it's got to be about just sticking with it and doing your best and making gains on your personal best the next time. That's got to be what it is, right?
Oh, absolutely. I just want to encourage everybody to get out there and go for it and, you know, and do what you think you can do. Just if it's a 5K or 100K, anything is a start and to get out there and do it.
And we live in such a gorgeous region too, right? Amanda, 2023 was your first 50-mile trail race, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah. And that was in Vermont. And I haven't seen any photos, but it sounds gorgeous. 900 feet of elevation gain, 10 hours running, walking. You can't pick a better setting to try this out, to see if this is for you than in our region, in my mind.
Oh, absolutely. And that is part of why we went to trail running, is that we live in the mountains. We have incredible trails to enjoy and be a part of every day. And when you're running along and you come up over a ridge and you see the spectacular like sunrise or view, it's just really inspiring.
That's all the time we have today on Living Healthy Together. Thanks, Amanda. Thanks, Johnny, for being with us today, talking about running, nutrition, extreme athletic events, how people can break into that if they're interested, and what they can do every day to get themselves a little bit more healthy and active. I'm your host, Philip Rao. We'll see you next time.